And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. Well, a couple things are going on today. We have our guest is Judy Mazzoline, and she's with the UFO Watchtower in Colorado. She's coming up. But before that, we have Andy Fleming is going to give us an astronomy little forecast of what's going on with Kepler, which always fascinates me. And just after that, but before Judy, we have Alejandro Rojas on. John Tobin, our new newscaster. Is off in Ireland having a good time. So we are newsless tonight. No news is good news, I guess. So anyway, we're going to start right off right now with Andy Fleming. And don't forget to go to podcastufo.com, that is, and sign up on the chat room so you can interact with Judy a little later on.
And hi, Martin and listeners to Podcast UFO, to this week's astronomy segment. And it's an interesting one. NASA's Kepler mission announced last Wednesday that 715 new planets have been discovered in multiple planet systems, much like our own solar system. Most of them are smaller than Neptune, which is almost four times the size of the Earth. The discovery marks a significant increase in the number of known small-sized planets more akin to the Earth. John Grunsfeld, Associate Administrator for NASA's Science Mission Directorate, said that these new planets and solar systems look somewhat like our own and portend to a great future when we have the James Webb Space Telescope in space to characterize the new worlds. Since the discovery of the first planets outside our own solar system roughly two decades ago, verification has been a laborious planet-by-planet process. Now, however, scientists have a statistical technique called multiplicity that can be applied to many planets at once when they're found in systems that harbour more than one planet around the same star. It relies in part on the logic of probability. It's a process that ultimately verifies multiple planet candidates in bulk and is unveiling a veritable bonanza of new worlds. These multiple planet systems are fertile grounds for studying individual planets and the configuration of planetary neighbourhoods. This provides clues to planet formation. Four of these new planets are less than 2.5 times the size of the Earth, and orbit in their sun's habitable zone, defined as the range of distance from a star where the surface temperature of an orbiting planet may be suitable for life-giving liquid water. One of these new habitable zone planets, called Kepler-296f, orbits a star half the size and 5% as bright as our own sun. Kepler-296f is twice the size of the Earth, but scientists do not know whether the planet is a gaseous world with a thick hydrogen-helium envelope or is a water world surrounded by a deep ocean. From this study, we learn planets in these multi-systems are small and their orbits are flat and circular, resembling pancakes. Not your classical view of an atom, said Jason Rowe, research scientist at the SETI Institute in Mountain View, California, and co-leader of the research. The more we explore, the more we find familiar traces of ourselves amongst the stars, and that reminds us of home. This latest discovery brings the confirmed count of planets outside our solar system to nearly 1,700. As we continue to reach toward the stars, each discovery brings us one step closer to a more accurate understanding of our place in space. Launched in March 2009, Kepler is the first NASA mission to find potentially habitable Earth-sized planets. Discoveries include more than 3,600 planet candidates, of which 961 have been verified as bona fide worlds. For more information about the Kepler Space Telescope, why not visit www.nasa.gov/Kepler.
Thanks a lot, Andy. And that is Andy Fleming from the UK. Always good to hear from him. And now we have Alejandro Rojas coming up. How you doing, Alejandro?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure having you.
Yes, it's always fun being on.
And I want to talk to you. You had a crazy week, real busy week a few weeks ago, the International UFO Congress. And let's just give a recap what happened there.
Yeah, we sure did. It is always crazy, and it zips by so quick, which is kind of unfortunate because you have a lot of friends from out of town you don't get to see often, and you don't get to spend as much time as you would like with them when you're putting these things on. But yeah, so we had several days of speakers, over 20 speakers, ranging from NASA scientists to a Bigfoot hunter. So, you know, we have a wide range of the very conservative, even mainstream, to the fringe.
I had mentioned earlier that I really enjoyed listening to Bennett. What did you think of him?
Oh, Bennett's incredible. Bennett's awesome. I'm a big fan. We're big fans here at Open Minds. He's, of course, mainstream, talking about the mainstream search, but he also speculates and has ideas about what, you know, extraterrestrial civilizations may be like, and they're very, I think, interesting ideas. So I think he's great. I really like Jeffrey Bennett. And he's impressive. He's a senior visiting scientist at NASA. He was written a book with Seth Shostak, and he informed us at the Congress that his children's books about space have gone to the International Space Station, and the astronauts are reading about them there.
How about that?
Yeah.
Now let's talk about the awards. You always have awards there. What happened with those?
We do Researcher of the Year, then we also do a Lifetime, and then we have our EBE Film Festival. So it's a film festival for usually for documentaries about UFOs, but sometimes we also have some narratives or fiction pieces. But yeah, the award went to Stephen Bassett for Researcher of the Year, and I think that's an easy one because the citizens hearing, no matter even though some of us have ideas of how it could have been done better, a lot of people complain about different aspects of it. There's no doubt it was very effective as far as getting the word out, letting people know about some very credible cases and people that are interested in this. And it was very convincing to many of the people, the former congressmen who they presented to. So that was a monumental effort. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree with that. You know, there, like you said, I got a lot of email people saying, oh, they shouldn't have done this, shouldn't have done that. And yeah, you can always look back and, you know, hindsight. But overall, you're right. The message got out there a lot better than it was before that.
Mm-hmm. So the Lifetime Achievement Award went to Bruce McAbee, who was a Navy. He worked for the Navy in optics, and he's been in this field for a long time, analyzing photos and videos. Mm-hmm. And he also was the first to do a FOIA to get the FBI UFO files, hundreds of files, files that he says they didn't even know they had. So really interesting stuff. And he has a new book actually coming out very soon here. Richard Dolan is publishing that, and it's the FBI and the CIA files that he'll be covering. So it's a reprint of the old with some new CIA stuff. So yeah, he's got a lifetime of amazing work. So we gave him the Lifetime Achievement Award there.
And he actually make it to the...
Right. He's had health issues, so he has not been able to make it. Actually, the last couple of years that we've brought him, and that's one reason we really wanted to give it to him, because he is getting older and he is having more problems traveling. So we wanted to give this award to him because he's done a lot of great work.
Yeah. Now, this this International UFO Congress is such a big deal. It's like one of the biggest or the biggest of its kind. Now, do you actually start working on next year's right away?
We do. Yeah, we start working on it right away because, like you said, it is the biggest. And, I mean, you've been to conferences. It's not like, you know, just a little bit bigger than the others. It's like three times bigger than the others. I mean, it's maybe more. We get just a packed house. It's absolutely packed with people in the vendors room, in the speakers room. A lot of people, a lot of researchers and ufologists, and that's what's kind of fun. Just like a normal convention, people get to get together and discuss, you know, the field and people's latest findings. So that's another thing we try to do is have speakers who have recent research and interesting research that others possibly haven't heard of. So, yeah, it's big. Mm-hmm. It's really big.
So, Alejandro, it's great having you on. Hope to have you back for a full show sometime. Can you tell the listener where to find all this information about, well, hey, let's say 2015 and what happened? Do you have any, like, press on the last one?
Oh, yeah. We've got tons of press on the last one. You can find that at our Facebook. Even if you go to Facebook and look for Alejandro Rojas, you'll see it. But openminds.tv is where you can go for all of our stories, for follow-up stories. For instance, Hoover – Richard Hoover, who is a NASA scientist who says we have evidence for extraterrestrial life, he's been making a lot of news. But you can go to openminds.tv to read more about all of that.
That's great. Okay, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you.
So, John Tobin, if you're listening, you missed Richard Hoover, the news. Jeez, I don't know. Hope you're having fun in Ireland. Hey, so our guest coming up is Judy Mezzoline in the UFO Watchtower. And we're going to talk all about that. And it's right after the music break. Hang in there. Don't go anywhere. And remember, sign in at the chat room if you want to interact at podcastufo.com. Stay with us. Judy, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good. So we're talking to you out in the San Luis, I'm not sure if that's how you say it or not, Valley, out there in Colorado.
Correct.
Yes. And, you know, I was looking at the map today, and I was in Taos one time, and I was living in Colorado I lived back in the 70s, and I tried to drive back roads, and I think I went through there, and it's absolutely beautiful. And if I remember right, it's extremely remote. Do I have the right place?
You've got the right place. We're located directly across from the Great Sand Dunes National Park.
Ah, okay. And it's a hot spot. I've heard about that for years for UFO sightings. And when you bought your ranch, you bought it for cattle, right? Can you tell the whole story of how this whole thing came about?
Yeah, we moved down here in 1995 to raise Highland cattle. But from the time we'd moved here, all I had heard were UFO stories from the locals. And it just got to the point I'd giggle and say, we need a UFO watchtower, never ever thinking I'd ever do it. Well, after 4.5 years, I found that cows don't eat sand real well. And they just about broke me because I had to feed them year-round. So I had to sell the herd. And then it was a matter of, what the heck do you do with the land, you know, because I didn't want to sell it. Well, one of the farmers talked to me one day, and he said, you know, Judy, you've laughed and joked about a UFO watchtower. You ought to put that up. You'd have fun. Well, by golly, I've had fun, but I've had experiences that I never dreamed I would have.
Now, I went on your website, which is ufowatchtower.com, and I could tell you right away, you have a sense of humor. and you're not really, you know, I wouldn't consider you a person making mockery because you've actually seen some things. You've witnessed 20-some-odd sightings, is that right?
Yeah, 26 since 2000. We've had 77 sightings from just the tower since 2000.
Now, there's a picture of a sighting. Well, it's a picture of some UFOs. Is that an actual picture of one of the sightings?
Yes.
On your website, I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because
now,
that's
we tried to post them.
That's a remarkable picture. With the lights on two crafts. Really, really something.
Yeah.
And
what we've seen has really, really been something.
Now, what type of sightings do you see? Is it mostly lights in the sky, or is it actually objects?
We've seen just mostly lights. Mm-hmm. The one object, it was like 11 o'clock at night. We had over a dozen people there, but I called it a cigar-shaped, and it moved from the north to the south really fast. It was, maybe half a mile away, but it was just huge.
Wow.
And I always like it when we have sightings and we have multiple eyes watching, you know?
Sure. Yeah, and especially if you get it on video or you know, someone takes a picture of it, too. That makes it even more solid. Have you had any, like, real serious investigators there?
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's talk about who's been there.
Oh, my goodness. A lot of folks from MUFON.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And Alejandro's, you talked to him, he's been here a number of times. In fact, he saw his first UFO here at our place.
He asked me to ask you about that off mic. So, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. How many people would you say come through there per year?
You know, I don't know per year. I sat down here a couple years ago. I have a guest book. Not everybody signs it, but it gives me some idea. And I sat down and counted the names in the guest book here a couple years ago, and there was about 20,000 who have been through.
Wow. Wow.
And I just think that's kind of neat.
Yeah. Now, generally speaking, do people come only at night or during the day, both, or what's the average?
Majority of the folks come during the day.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of intimidates people. And I've told folks, I said, you just quit watching those horror movies on TV because that's not what this is all about. So, but yeah, we get quite a few in the evening during the summer, mm-hmm. but it's bitter cold here in the winter, and periodically we get a straggler in during the winter, but when it's 20 below zero, nobody wants to sit out, you know?
Yeah, it wouldn't be fun. And this is, if someone goes on podcastufo.com, if you go to the chat room, you can ask question for our guest mm-hmm. tonight, but there's a picture, I believe there's a little video on podcastufo.com, and if you Google the UFO Watchtower, you'll see all kinds of pictures, and also you can get to the website there. So you constructed this what year?
In 2000.
In 2000, wow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And do you get ridiculed about this a little bit, or, you know, I mean, or do people take it seriously, or do you get everything in between?
I get everything, and most of the folks are pretty open-minded, you know, and I ask them to be open-minded when they come, because I give them a little tour when they come and tell them about the place. We have a healing garden out front, and I take them through that. And then inside the shop, I've got all kinds of pictures and articles and stuff for people to read. And all I've really asked for is when they get finished at the UFO Watchtower, at least it gave them something to think about. And
right.
that's all you can ask of anybody, you know. But I've gotten a kick out of a lot of people because I always, whenever they come, I always say, have you ever seen anything? And most of the folks will stand there and hang their head and shake it real slow. Well, after they've talked with me for a bit, then they'll come up and they'll say, yeah, I did see something once.
Isn't it something how a lot of people are just afraid to talk about it? That's what makes me think, you know, when they say there are 30,000 reported sightings a year worldwide, makes me really wonder how many there really are. Because so many people just want to keep it to themselves. I mean, I've talked to a number of people that have told me about a sighting, and, you know, I asked them if they have ever reported it, and they said no. And some people have told no one before they told me.
And that's, I think that happens an awful lot.
Now, were there sightings on your ranch before? I'm looking at the chat room. There was a couple of questions. Someone wants to know how high it is. And I was wondering, it must have been quite an undertaking as far as a cost for that. Did you have to spend all the money you sold your cattle for to get that thing up?
Yeah, I had a business that I was trying to sell in Denver. And so the proceeds from that business helped me to build this. But it's just been phenomenal, the reactions that I've gotten. You know, some people, well, there's a lot of folks that giggle about it when they come in. But like I said, when they leave, by the time they leave, they're not giggling anymore. They're thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Now, someone wants to know how tall the tower is. It's not a real tall tower. It's more or less an observation area, isn't it?
Right, right. See, we're at 7,600 feet here to begin with.
Oh, my goodness.
we put the tower up at 10 foot high, and it gets you up off the lay of the land. But, gosh, how much higher do you have to go, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking about a year ago, I saw a documentary. I don't know when it was made, but it was on the valley there and all the sightings that happened there. And why do you suppose that is? It's such a hot spot. Is there any theories about that?
There's all kinds of ideas. Some say that in Mount Blanket, the big mountain over here, that there's an ET base in that. And it wouldn't surprise me if there wasn't, because, I mean, I get reports all the time of people seeing things flying around over there. Some say it's the spirituality of the valley. The Native Americans considered the valley floor sacred, so they would not fight on the valley floor. They would go on the mountains and fight.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
I think so, too.
Hmm.
And then others say that it's the vastness of the valley, because the valley is like 75 miles wide and 100 miles long. But we don't have a lot of people who live here, maybe 45,000.
So you have, no light pollution, for one.
Hardly any, yeah. Mm-hmm. And from our place, I own all the land around it, so I can pretty much control the light pollution. and that's why I have the land. I'm not going to, people want to buy it, and I go,
uh-huh. Yeah.
So, but I was reading a magazine from Great Britain, and in there it said that the majority of their sightings was where there were hot water wells.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, this valley is full of hot water wells, and that makes sense to me more so than the other things.
Yeah.
I always try to find something that makes a little bit of sense, and that kind of made sense to me.
You know, a lot of times there's speculation of what these things are, and there's never been an answer, and who knows if in our lifetime there will be an answer. A lot of people that come there, do they think they're actually seeing aliens, or, you know, do they talk about that?
Well, a lot of people think I should have them sitting there waiting to greet them, you know. You know, we talk about it a lot over there. I was reading a book from Gene Dixon, that Gene Dixon wrote, and it was on the mysteries and secrets of the world. And in there she talked about extraterrestrials, and she says that they are already walking amongst us and that they look just like us. That wouldn't surprise me either, you know?
Yeah, you know, I've talked to someone years ago that, you know, had the theory of that, you know, we're seated, you know, type of thing. And, you know, I don't know, you know, I mean, the more you try to uncover, it just seems like the less you know about what's going on. You know, some people would say that they think there might be interdimensional or time travelers. You know, you hear all different kinds of theories about what they could possibly be. And it's all interesting. And, you know, if you're keeping an open mind, it's really fascinating to look at each aspect of possibilities.
And they could all be right, you know? Who knows?
That's right. Has anyone ever seen anything land out in the valley that you're aware
of? Yes.
Really?
Yes. Down by Villa Grove, I had, shortly after I opened, I had a lot of people come in and tell me that they had seen one from the highway that had landed. And I said, well, did you go look? Oh, my good God, no. We put the pedal to the metal, scared us to death. So, and then another one was down here by Antonito. And I had a lady in who had told me that she and her sister witnessed one land down there. But again, they wouldn't go near it. See, now I'm stupid enough, I'd go. I want to know, doggone it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, do you also get some real fringe type people that are very colorful there as well? I mean, yes, you do. And do you have, like, one other thing I thought of, do you have, like, regulars?
Yeah, we used to have regulars for the first maybe 10 years, and then they moved to other parts of the country. But I always, it seems like folks put us on their where-to-go list when they come to the valley. So I get to see a number of people over and over and over.
Mm-hmm. Now, before you had ever moved there, well, let me ask you this. What made you move there to begin with?
The price of the land.
Ah, and you bought a lot of it, it sounds like.
I did. I have 600 acres.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. That's like, that's more than a mile, isn't it? Or is it a mile?
640 is 1 square mile. And see, I really messed up because my son got out of the Navy and wanted to live here. So I gave him 40 acres.
Well, oh, so you missed your mile.
So I missed it. I had it once.
Wow, that's amazing. And so you bought it because the land was a really good buy. And but like I said, I drove through there, and I remember it up in that part of, like, northern Mexico into Colorado, feeling, I don't know, it was, I can't really describe the feeling, but I remember I was having trouble with my car, and I felt kind of isolated and nervous. I guess if you really want to be alone, that is a good place to go.
It definitely is. Yeah.
And so that must, you know, the people that live there must be real hardy, like yourself, you know what I mean, to be able to survive in sort of an isolated area.
Yeah, and, you know, you have to like being alone. Now, it drove the grandkids nuts because we didn't have a mall here. Our mall was Kmart, or Walmart, and so they wanted to go to a real mall, you know, which we don't have.
Yeah, it's probably like 100 miles away or something, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you talk about, has people like Stan Friedman ever been there, or someone like that? Any people of note that you can talk about that has shown up there besides
Stan
Alejandro?
Stan Friedman hasn't. Stephen Greer has.
Ah, yeah.
And see, he holds these workshops every summer up in Crestone.
Uh-huh.
And so it's funny how the people who go to those workshops will come over to the tower to practice. So I get a kick out of them. But, yeah, he's been there a number of times.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's a little bit of controversy about those whole things with Greer. I'm not going to get into it on this podcast, but I do want to say one thing. We did bring this up before, that he actually charged people for taking a picture of themselves inside of an invisible UFO. Have you ever seen any of those shenanigans?
No.
Interesting, to say the least. So as far as your tower there, what do you plan for the future of the place? Do you just Do you plan to always hang on to it and maintain it and keep it open?
That's my plan at this point, until I get too old to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've been discussing with the family about what happens when your mother dies. Uh-huh. You know, what are you going to do with the UFO watchtower? Because it's something that I feel should stay. It should be here.
Right.
So I've got all of them thinking on it, but I guess my daughter-in-law is the one who stepped up to the plate and said she'd like to run it herself. So
really?
That may be an option, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't think it would be a huge cash cow, but it would still be interesting. Let's see. I do have a question on the message board here. And, oh, Lee, how you doing? He wants to know if you can recount the strangest incident that you've ever had.
I had come over to the house one day, and some of my locals were over at the shop, and they were watching it for a minute, so I could come do something over here. And I went back over, and the gal comes running out, and she says, "You've got to get in here quick." And I said, "What's the matter?" And she said, "Well, there's these people in here, and they're saying that they're part alien." Huh? And I said, "Well, they could be, you know." So I went in, and by golly, they very well could have been. They were from Canada. There were three of them. And there was one that was super, super tall, light-skinned, blonde hair. And then
another, the tall ones, or whatever you call them, the tall blondes. Wow.
Yeah, and then, yeah, but and they call them Nordics, I think.
Yeah.
Right? But anyway, and then the other two were quite a bit shorter. And nice folks, you know. But they had come to see what was going on here. And as it ended up, geez, I think I spent like 3 hours with them.
Huh.
And it was nothing that was to be afraid of. I mean,
did they actually tell you that they were aliens?
Part alien?
They did.
And I've had others in that have said the thing. I think so far I've had about 11 or 12 in that have told me that they were part alien.
Well, so. that's really something. Now, has anyone ever talked about abductions in that area?
I get lots of abduction stories, and in fact, I've had a couple of the campers who have said that they thought that they had had an experience while they were here.
Oh, you actually have a campground right there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Let's see, how far, this is from Andy, how far is the ranch from Area 51 and S4?
And long has ways. Anyone?
Oh, it's a long ways.
Yeah,
you're in Colorado. That is quite a ways. And the person who asked is over in the UK, so I can understand the question. Now, has anyone ever spotted any the big black triangles they always talk about?
Yeah, it was a year ago last December, and I got a phone call, and this guy, he says, "Judy, have you been watching that triangle up by the moon?" He says, "It's been there like 3 nights. He said, "You need to get out your binoculars and go look." So after it got dark, I went out. Didn't need binoculars. I mean, it was so big.
Really?
Yeah, it was just huge. And you could see it with the naked eye. And it was there another couple nights, and then it just vanished.
Wow, isn't that something? Yes, we actually have a amateur astronomer who helps us out. And he's talked earlier. You probably heard him. And he's on our chat room right now. And he was out with his telescope and spotted a big triangle, and that kind of changed everything for him.
It usually does.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier that a lot of times it gets 20 below there in the winter, and it's been out here in New England, it's been a terrible winter. But but I always think of the winter months as being crystal clear skies.
And they are. Mm-hmm.
So do you still go out yourself and check things out when it's not too cold?
I try to, yeah, but I'm at the point in my life that I'm older now and I get cold.
Yeah.
So and, we had a group.
26 sightings, I mean, you know, that's enough.
You know, you can see them, but each time you see a sighting, even after as many as I've gotten to see, it's still exciting.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure. Now, because the whole valley is so active, are there any other active hot spots in the valley, or is it mostly what you can see right out your door?
No, it's all over the valley.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So, and I depend upon the locals to call me if they've seen something, you know. And a lot of them do. They'll call and say, you just won't believe what I saw tonight. You know? Or there's been a lot of daytime sightings, too.
There has. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And during the day, are they actually seeing objects? Because
yes.
I know you mentioned lights mostly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're seeing objects. And I had a fella, he came down, nicest guy. Anyway, he was going through the valley, and he spent the night here, and he spent the night down at the other end. But it was February 10th, so that was just here a couple weeks ago. And he was driving the 28 miles towards the tower, and he saw something. It was about 6 o'clock, and he saw these lights. He was talking on his phone, and he saw these lights, and he started snapping pictures. And so we have some of his pictures that he had taken, and it's pretty, pretty amazing.
Now, besides the pictures in your little shop there, do you sell little trinkets and gifts to memorabilia for people that stop in there?
Yeah, you know, we got to pay the taxes somehow. So I charge a little admission fee, and sell little trinkets just to pay my taxes. That's about it, too.
I see. Now, can you recall someone that just this happens in any type of location where someone will come and they just won't go away? Do you ever have that happen where people are there for like hours and hours and hours?
Yep.
All part of dealing with it.
That's it. And we have some that come back year after year, and it's the same thing, you know.
Someone on the message board wonders if you'd ever entertain doing a podcast group at your place, or have you ever done anything like that?
No, and I'd love to do it. You know,
I
think that would be fun.
Yeah.
But we have a conference every year. And this year it'll be the 26th and 27th of July. That's the closest we get to doing anything like that.
You know, I'm surprised that no one has actually ever come out there and just, you know, made it a situation where they were just going to film and done some type of documentary. I know there was one on the valley itself, but, I mean, right there at your spot, I mean, if there's been that many sightings in what I consider a rather short period of time. You know, someone's not out there all the time, and if they could just have, you know, some, like, for instance, in Europe, there's a motion-activated, I'm trying to remember the name of the town and where it is, a motion-activated science-type camera that just takes film constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just surprised no one's, has anyone ever approached you for an idea like that?
Well, folks have asked me to put up, like, a camera hooked up to the computer and have it going 24 hours a day and stuff. But I don't know what good that would do here from the house, because we don't have electricity over at the tower. So, and there was a reason for that. Why go to all that expense when you don't want lights anyway, you know?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So I just never did put electricity over. I did buy some trail cams this year. But now it's a matter of where I can mount them so nobody will mess with them, you know.
And I imagine your tower had to be really secure and safety in mind, too, because I know how these insurance companies are. So do you have to upkeep it, or is it just it's metal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, so. It's made out of pipe and expanded metal. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
It's like
uh-huh.
a batting cage is how they explain it.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier in the show that there was several photos of UFO sightings. Would you guess how many that you have in there that people can look at?
Oh, wow. Probably close to about 100, I guess. Not all of them are from the valley. I mean, they're from other places as well.
Oh, I see. And are these framed things or just, you know, just like photographs? Can people buy any of those copies, or is it just for display?
All of it's just for display. I have a a notebook, or I've got a lot of them in there, and I will go through the notebook with people, you know, explaining what it is that they're looking at. But I've never thought of, well, I did. One time I thought, gee, this ought to sell, right? Then it didn't, so I didn't try to do it again.
Yeah. Now, where your ranch is and the whole surrounding area, I'm sure there's, I just picture that there's a lot of old-timers that have been there forever. Was there talk, like a history going way back there on sightings?
Yeah. I have a friend who's a farmer, but her grandfather used to tell her about the train light, is what he called it, that came through Music Pass. And he used to see it all the time back in the 40s. Hmm. And the thing with that is there's no roads up to Music Pass. The only access is by horseback. And there's no way somebody could carry a huge light, you know, that big where you could see it from where we are. So, yeah, we've heard that. I had went up to the coffee shop one day, and one of the farmers was up there with his nephews, and he said, you know, that lady is putting that thing up down the road. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, I saw something once and never did tell the family about it. But he described it as he was out changing irrigation tubes at 4 o'clock in the morning, and this bright light appeared, and all the irrigation water turned blood red.
Oh, really?
And then, yeah, and then the light went away, and everything was back to normal.
But, oh, that's bizarre.
And then I've had farmers tell me how they're driving down one of the back roads, and all of a sudden, there was a saucer-shaped object next to them, just keeping right up with them going down the road.
Wow. And do you know of, like, the earliest known sighting in the sightings in the area?
I think it was the 1700s.
Was it the Spanish?
Yes. And they documented what they had seen. But I don't have any more detail than that. I don't know what it was that they said that they saw, but from what I understand, it was the 1700s.
Now, one thing I just thought of, has there ever been any time where, like, when you had your cattle there, where they were reacting or acting strange or anything like that?
No, but we rented some land west of us to bring the cows down and put on it before we've got our fences up. And the farmer gave me a call, and he said, well, Judy, he says, hope your pen's ready because I want to put my cows on there. And this was in August. And he says, you need to move them. And I said, oh, okay. So we got everything in order, and we moved the cows. Well, in October, they had a cattle mutilation on the same property.
Really? Because we just had that come up on the message board. So were there other mutilations there as well?
They have estimated 10,000 to 15,000 mutilations in this valley in northern New Mexico since the 60s.
My God.
And they're still going on. I mean, it's nothing that has stopped. Do I think it's extraterrestrial? No, I don't. So I said if it was, you'd have heard a lot about them long before the 60s. Wow. But I'm not an expert on it. You know, again, I try to reason things out in my own mind.
Right. I have that. That's something I would actually like to do a show on if I can at some point, to talk to someone about the mutilations, because, you know, there's all types of explanations that people think they can have. But, you know, when it comes to some really bizarre ones where, you know, there's no tracks around, there's no sign of any blood, you know, there's just another puzzle.
Mm-hmm. And the one I got to go see, I think it was in 2004. But anyway.
Oh, you actually saw it yourself?
Yeah, the rancher, his wife called me and said, we've had a mutilation. Did you want to come see? And I said, yeah. So off I go. But the rancher said that the day before they found the cow, that there was all kinds of military aircraft flying around the ranch.
Wow.
And then the next morning, they found this mutilated cow. And it was really strange because she had a baby, and that baby would not go near her. And see, that's unusual. I mean, whether a mama's dead or alive, the calf always stays right with mama. And that baby would not go near her. And so while we were there, about 20 cows made a big circle around her. And one by one, they would step forward and jump back, step forward and jump back. It was just bizarre. Their behavior was crazy. But anyway, yeah, I got to see one. And
now,
that was kind of exciting.
So you said you didn't think they were extraterrestrial. What do you, if you had to guess, what would you guess?
I would guess that it's military, and I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this.
You can say anything you want. And there was a question that just came up on the board was, has there been any government are you aware of in the area or military? And you're kind of answering that. Mm-hmm. Just go ahead and if you would explain why you think that, besides you said there were military craft or helicopters or something. Is there other reasons you think military involved in that?
Yeah. I had a woman call me, and she said, I just wanted you to know that I just saw a military aircraft drop a mutilated cow. And see, I had been thinking this all along, and then she called me and verified it.
Now, why would the military do that? That's the question that comes to mind for me. Like, what purpose would the military have for mutilating a cow?
Well, I think that they are doing spot checks for radiation. And see, the one that I got to go see, she was near an old radioactive waste dump. You have to look at the parts of an animal that would hold the radiation. Those are the parts that were missing on her. And it was like the skin was all burned along the side of her face. The pituitary gland, the thyroid gland, the tongue, and part of the brain were gone. Well, when an animal is grazing, what parts of that body would hold radiation or radioactive material? So, and anyway, I said you get a lot of time to think out here in the boonies, you know? And I come up with my own ideas on stuff.
Well, you know, that kind of just reminds me of one thing I heard about, well, when I read the book, The Skinwalker Ranch, and how this cow was just dropped head first into a hole, and they have no, and it was mutilated, and they had no idea. It was like it was picked up by something and dropped into a hole. Mm-hmm. So when you said that this helicopter picked it up and dropped it, why would they pick it up and drop it? I mean,
well, I think they picked it up, did their testing, and then put it back close to where they had gotten it from. And see, a lot of times all four legs on the animal are broke. So how would the legs get broke?
I see. And let's see, there's a question on the board, and it says, don't you think the military would just raise their own cows to check out? But you're talking about these cows are out in areas where they possibly had testing or something at one time?
Yeah, and see, after owning animals myself, if somebody wanted one of the animals, and this is something that is people have thrown at me, is, well, the military or the government isn't going to want anybody to know what they're doing. So that's why they won't go buy the animal. And I say that's taking out food out of that farmer's mouth. You know, it really is. But if somebody would have walked up to my front door and said, here's $1,000, I want that cow, and I'd say, let me help you load it. You know, I wouldn't have questioned who they were or anything else. So, yeah, I don't get it. But I've had other talk show hosts say to me, well, don't you think the government doesn't want the American public to panic? Well, you know, I'm going to panic not knowing. I don't see why there would be any idea like that. But who knows?
Has any of you, this is another question on the board, has any of your cattle ever gone missing when you had them?
No. Nope.
So this was all post when your cattle were gone and you had your tower up?
Yeah, and, well, yeah, pretty much so. The see, we have all of our animals, we had them all right here in front of the house. So I think that makes a difference when you have them close to home.
Yeah, I guess it would be a little more difficult for, you know, someone to come in there. But another thing that kind of gets me, if these, say, your thoughts about the military, if they would come in a helicopter, I would think that it would just cause so much of a ruckus that, I mean, is it that remote that they can actually do that?
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
And maybe it's not a helicopter. Maybe it's another kind of aircraft. But you know, the black helicopters fly over here in pairs periodically. They'll fly over my tower, circle around, and fly back. They are not that loud.
Huh.
And here a couple years ago, I had two F-16s that flew over, and that surprised me because you would think it would just blow your eardrums, you know. But they were so low, if somebody had been up on that tower, they could have touched them.
Wow. We had someone on the message board that actually made a pretty good point. And that is, you would think that they would just take the cow away and not bring it back.
Yeah, you would think.
So why would you think they would bring it back? You know, I mean, that is a good question.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe they don't have a place to dispose of it. That could be.
Well, yeah, but also, to me, it would just seem like it would just cause more questions. Or they
maybe
would,
that's the whole idea.
It's possible. And, you know, maybe they would can just, you know, the average comment to cattle mutilations is, you know, predators. And maybe that's what they're just hoping that people just think.
Yeah, I had a fella come into this shop. He was one of the local cowboys. And he looked at my mutilation picture and he said, magpie did that. And I thought, oh, good, now they have scissors for beaks, huh?
Yeah, those magpie, I remember them out there. They are pretty vicious birds.
Yeah, but, you know, when the skin is not torn, you know, and any time a bird has to get the skin off or whatever, I mean, they'll start tugging at it. It's going to tear. And the skin was not torn on this cow. It was like somebody used a laser or something and just burned the whole thing around.
Okay. Now, I know I'm getting way off topic here, but when you first moved there, and did you brought all the cattle with you or you bought cattle? What was your intentions?
The intention was to raise Highland cattle. And so Stan and I started a little herd when I lived in Golden, and then we kept buying more and more and more, and they kept reproducing. So by the time I sold them, we had about 70 head.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, we got about 5 minutes left or something like that. I'm going to take a look at the message board and see if we have any questions. And I would like for you to tell the listeners basically how they can find you and if they're on a trip across country. Just go ahead and explain. First of all, your website is?
It's UFOWatchtower.com. And we're located in the San Luis Valley, which is southwestern Colorado. We're 22 and a half miles north of Alamosa. We're 200 miles south of Denver, if that helps any.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we're located right on Highway 17. And you can get on 17 through 160 there in Alamosa.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not difficult to find.
And if you're, like I mentioned earlier, when I was coming up from the Taos area in New Mexico, is there a route that actually goes toward your place from there?
Yeah, if you get over to 285, you'll take 285 north to 160, go east on 160 to Highway 17.
I see. Uh-huh. And another question on the board, Eric wants to know, do people actually come there with their own telescopes too?
Oh, yeah. And we'll have groups that like to do the night watching, and they'll come with their telescopes to sit out there and see what they can see.
Oh, that's great. And do you ever have any, like, astronomy people come there or just people curious about UFOs?
No, we've had the astronomy people come. I had a professor who taught astronomy from back east. He used to come here all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think he retired. But anyway.
Uh-huh. Has anyone, but, you know, in your with your knowledge, has anyone ever pointed a laser out at one of these lights in the sky?
Yeah, we were talking about Stephen Greer's group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we had a group of them come one night, and they brought the high-powered flashlights. So anyway, according to Stephen Greer, you can communicate with the flashlight.
Now, did you watch him in action?
Stephen, no. I watched his students.
His students, okay.
Yeah, but they saw a light off to the west. They flashed at it twice.
These are ambassadors to the universe. Am I saying that right?
I don't know.
I think they call them that, ambassadors to the universe. I think you get a certificate and everything.
Oh, that could be.
Yeah.
But anyway, they flashed at it twice. It flashed back twice, then it moved. They flashed at it twice. It flashed back twice. It moved again in the same scenario.
Huh.
So, yeah, and that was with those, I don't know, million power lights or whatever they are.
Now, have you ever had any, like, men in black or government people actually come there and ask you specific questions of any kind?
I don't think they would tell me who they were.
Yeah.
But I did find out in the garden. I tell folks to leave stuff in the garden, okay? And I found out in the garden a business card from a guy who was in the FBI.
He actually left his business card?
Yeah, he even put a phone number on it, and everybody's saying, Judy, you ought to call it. And I'm like, no, I don't want to call it. But I got it kicked out of him.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So I bet you, you know, going back, you can have thoughts of some real comical people that have been there, some interesting people. So overall, this has been a really big treat for you to do this.
Oh, yeah, and when it slows down in the winter, I just can hardly wait for summer to get here again because I enjoy all the people.
Yeah.
And there is a link on my website to see an interview that was done through Vice. Did you see the link on there?
No, but I'm sorry, I didn't. I missed that. But the listener, go ahead and tell them.
Yeah, well, it's on the website. And just click on, it says the Vice interview. But they did a really, really good job.
Oh, is this a video interview?
Uh-huh. It's on YouTube.
Uh-huh. Now, do you have a Facebook page, too?
Yes.
Okay. And it's, go ahead.
UFO Watchtower.
Yeah.
Or Judy Messaline. And I have two pages.
I see. Uh-huh. Well, very good, Judy. You've been a lot of fun. And I wish you best of luck out there and stay away from the cattle.
Okay.
And thanks so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for your time too, Martin.
You bet.
Take care.
You too.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the show today. If you missed any part of this show, you can catch it as a podcast and a whole bunch of other free podcasts on our website, which is podcastufo.com. I want to thank all the people that have been on the chat room tonight and your questions. I really appreciate that. You can also check out links and stories in our show notes, as well as joining in the conversation on the forums. I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. Keith Rowland for producing the show for the Dark Matter Radio Network. I want to thank Alejandro Rojas, who was on earlier. I want to thank Andy Fleming for the astronomy, look at the astronomy, little bit that he did there. Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse for our music. Of course, Peggy, who's always on the chat room. Thank you, Peggy. Thank you for managing our Facebook page. You do a great job. And remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. You can check us out live next week right here at the Dark Matter Radio Network and every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And don't forget to jump in the chat room like you did this evening. I appreciate that. Well, this is Martin Willis reminding you to keep your eyes to the sky and your curiosity high.